Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. So stay tuned. This is Bill Hendrickson, your host of this hour. And these two guests that we have today could probably recite this introduction by heart because they've been on the show many times. And it's been a while since you've been on the show.
A couple of months. The
world of sports goes pretty fast, and I don't want you to miss a lot of events that do happen. And of course, right now, we have an event that's shaking the world, particularly the football world, to the bottom of its roots. And, I've been reading about this in the New York Times today and on the web. And one thing I mentioned, that the coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, when they took DeMar Hamlin out by ambulance, the coach said, "I'm not coaching. I'm going to the hospital with him."
And that was the opposing team.
Yeah, the Bengals team.
So thank goodness. I was a little bit surprised that they actually postponed the game, because that's not my impression of the NFL. But and it took the NFL a while. The teams actually had decided that prior to the NFL's official decision.
I think that's what made the decision.
The teams made the decision.
They probably
said that they weren't going to play, and then about a half an hour later, the NFL made the official decision that they're suspending the game. And right now, at least from what I read about 3 hours ago, they're not certain whether they're going to actually try to finish it or not. I think it'll have to do with who's, if it makes a big difference in the playoffs, then they'll probably finish the game.
How would they finish it? How would they squeeze it in schedule wise?
I have no idea, because that's, they're going to play Saturday and Sunday just like normal.
You mean the teams that have this, the Bills and the Bengals are going to play?
Yeah, they have their regular games. The Bills suspended practice until today.
Yeah, to Wednesday.
This is the first day that they practiced.
And they're playing the Patriots.
Well, good. I hope they beat them.
Yeah. Well, every time you watch tackling, it's going to remind us, it's going to remind millions of what they saw on the field this particular time. And
I think this is called tachycardia. Actually, my wife Patty explained it to me before the news program that I was watching explained it to me. And it has to be at a certain time in a certain sequence of your heartbeat that you get a jolt.
Yeah.
And it can happen to anybody. And it goes into arrhythmia. And so, he suffered cardiac arrest, meaning that, he wasn't getting blood or oxygen. So very, very serious stuff.
But how did the moment at the particular element of time happen, as opposed to many other players getting tackled in in the same style?
Like I said, just one instant of hitting in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
I said this play in this conversation at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Because it can happen anytime to anybody if you have a blow to your chest when your heartbeat is in a certain sequence. So I saw the tackle. It wasn't. Didn't
yeah,
seem that
I saw it repeated. I didn't see it actually, yeah. But you saw him get up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then boom.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing, because this instant that you're talking about must have happened just as he got up.
Well, actually, no. When the contact was made, his heart went into arrhythmia, but you don't lose oxygen to your brain, you know, immediately, because your blood's already flowing. So it took about a second or two for, you know, for him to lose oxygen to his brain. And that's when he passed out.
Well, you guys, particularly Bob, has seen so many football games locally. Do you remember any conditions where ambulances were needed to cart off players?
Well, remembered one here at Chapel Hill was a referee collapsed on the field,
and that was a referee.
That was a Carolina Virginia game in the late 90s,
and right. I was there.
Yeah, and the story was that, of course, he wasn't hit by anything. He just he basically had a heart attack right there on the field, and they said he was dead when he hit the field. But they brought him back.
Oh, they did bring him back.
Oh, yeah. And then they had him in. They had the ambulance out there, and they took him in. They carted. You know, the hospital is basically right next door to Keenan Stadium. Yeah. So they had him. They had him over the hospital within 5 or 10 minutes, and I think they said he had another heart. He expired again on the way to the hospital, and they brought him back again. So he would not have survived. If he had been at any other place, he was at the perfect place at the perfect time. Those medical people were on top of him within less than a minute of when that happened. And I think they used a defibrillator with him right on the field, if I remember.
They did.
Yeah.
Well, they did.
The football management must be fully prepared for these emergencies. Well,
they have medical people there, you know, at every game. There was a situation last night at a Carolina basketball game that was in the section where I usher.
I want to ask you about that, Bob.
A lady, the deputy sheriff that was next to me, who was the first one to her, said that she had a pulse and she was breathing when he got there. And she never stopped breathing, and she always had a pulse. So she basically, I guess, blacked out. That's what it amounted to. But
did she survive?
Well, as far as they took her on to the hospital. I haven't heard anything otherwise. I don't know whether it would be a public announcement if she didn't. But it was a kind of scary thing. But those people there, I mean, they had. I mean, there were doctors on her within 30 who were sitting around her. I mean, two or three people I heard say, "I'm a doctor," and he was there. And then the rescue squad people came in. But one of the problems they had is she was sitting on the third row, close to the floor. And they
are you still doing the raffy during the ushering?
Yeah, I just said she was in the section where I usher. She was right there. I mean, she wasn't 50 feet from me. And so they had to get down there to where she is, because she was right down next to the floor. And the rescue squad people and all those folks are up on the concourse level. So they got to come down through the stand, through the crowd, you know, down the aisle. Of course, they also had the head trainer from the basketball team. He came racing over there, and as I said, other medical people around her. And so after they worked with her, I guess for 10 minutes or more, they had a wheelchair, and they had her in a wheelchair and wheeled her out. And then later I was told by the deputy sheriff, who's right there next to me, that they had taken her on to the hospital. So she looked like she was probably 60 years old or in that range.
Yeah, not terribly old.
No. But her her color was bad.
God, she
was kind of a bluish gray kind of look.
I saw her from across the court, and I looked at her face when they finally got her in that chair.
Yeah.
And I went, man, she looked like a ghost.
Yeah.
Because it was frightening just to look at the skin color. And
yeah.
And then once they started to carry her out, her head flopped forward.
Well, I didn't
initially
see that.
Yeah, because it was like right past you, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah.
And her head kind of flopped forward. She was sitting in that chair they were trying to carry her out. And the EMT guy had to stabilize her head with his hands.
Mm.
And I'm going, Bob, oh my gosh, that looks bad.
Well, yeah. Bob, you've done this for 50 years. How many have you had other emergencies like that?
That's the first one. That's the first one I've ever been that close to.
Uh-huh. Well, what happened to that, to the game?
They've had folks go.
Oh, gosh.
Folks collapse.
Three or four years ago, this happened in the upper deck. A guy had a heart attack, and he was all the way across the building from where the rescue people were, and in the upper deck. And the usher basically saved him. He gave him CPR right there on the floor in the row of the aisle where the man was sitting. The usher did that. But yeah, I imagine they've had good God, the building's been there 36 years, 21,000 people in there. You know, they've had multiple health issues many, many times. But that's the closest I've ever been to one in my time. And basically I just stayed out of the way. I just made sure the crowd was back, and I'm just so that the right people that could get to her to do what they needed to do could be there. But
what happened to the game at that time?
Well, they didn't play.
The good thing about it.
When they came, the game stopped. It was during a timeout, and so the players came back on the floor at the end of the timeout, and the referee, they waved them off back to their benches, and so they stayed. There was no game going on, and then after they got her. They went back out, and they had about a two minute warm up period, so the players could shoot some and loosen up again, and then they picked the game back up.
Yeah, well, that's obviously what they should have done. And I don't know how do you feel about this the Cincinnati Buffalo game? Should that have started up again? I mean, that's a tall question.
I think that was a much more serious situation.
And the reason I say no is because the people that they were asking would have asked to play would be the teammate of the person that
had broken
down.
That's right.
And the focus, the mental, I just don't think that they would have played or wanted to play at all.
No.
Yeah.
Wasn't it a few years ago that state player collapsed? Basketball player collapsed.
Oh my God! Yes, I saw that on TV.
I don't think they continued that game, did they? Didn't they suspend that game?
Yeah, I believe they did.
Yeah, I believe they did.
That game was suspended. I remember that.
Yeah. That's a different situation. Different situation there.
Yeah, being in the audience is one thing. Being a teammate is quite a different story.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen a lot of football players being carried out by their teammates or by somebody else into the locker room or into, you don't know where they're going. And all these games have always continued.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, I don't think it would have been a situation where it was life or death. Yeah,
I mean, even when you have something like Joe Theismann's broken leg,
yeah,
We figured he was going to live, although it looked gruesome.
Yeah.
We figured he was going to be fine eventually, and, you know, they continue to play the game. Most of these things are knee injuries or...
Yeah, they're not life or death. They're
ankle injuries.
Serious injuries, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Guy collapses on the field and had they not had immediate attention, he'd be dead.
Yeah.
Well, the amazing thing that does amaze me about his collapse on the field, that they were out there so quickly and were able to resuscitate him.
Right.
And that took a lot of pre-planning to be able to accomplish that as fast as they did.
I heard one of those medical people for one of those teams, I don't remember which one, I don't know if it's the Bengals or which Bills, but he said we prepare for this all the time. He said just like a team practices for games, we prepare for situations. So they're ready to handle it as best they can.
So you say they expect these kind of things and they're ready for them if they happen. Is that kind of what you're saying?
I think so. I mean, they're trained medical people. They know what they're doing. Yeah. And best thing to do is let them handle it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in Hillsboro, I think it was 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, a kid had a neck injury. He had a neurological issue, collapsed on the field, and they have ambulances at high school games too.
Oh yeah.
There was some initial discussion about whether they should drive the ambulance on the field to get this kid, and finally, smarter heads prevailed and said, "Who gives a crap about the pass? Get out there, the kid in the ambulance."
Right. Well, I remember when the referee collapsed at Keenan Stadium. They drove the ambulance rescue vehicle right out on the field and loaded him into it right there on the field.
Yeah. Well, I guess you got to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's that thing in Hillsboro in a soccer match? Was it
no, football. It was high school football, and the kid actually came to our Kiwanis club and spoke. He's still got difficulties.
Well, I remember seeing him in the Kiwanis club. He came in one day with his mother, and
yes, maybe his mother and father,
and he had a little trouble talking. His speech was
right. And from all reports, Tom Carr, I asked him yesterday, as a matter of fact, Tuesday, and he said he's still having some difficulties. He's improving, but it's a long, long haul.
So he's getting pretty old now. He's in mid-20s or something?
Well, he's probably 20, 21. Yeah. It's been, I guess it's been 3 years, 2.5 years, something like that.
So the referee that collapsed, his name was Jim Knight. He came back and refereed later in. Yeah, he did some more refereeing in later years. So he came back. One of the best programs, the Rotary Club I'm in, several years ago. We had, he's a member of that club, Dr. Bud Harper, Jim Harper, a cardiologist, who happened to be on duty at UNC Hospital that day when the referee, and so he gave a program at Rotary about the situation. And it was spellbinding to hear him describe.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was just amazing. And you were almost sitting there scared to take a breath, because you didn't want to miss something. And it was a very, very good program. And it's probably one of the most memorable programs I've ever heard.
Well, one of the most dangerous things about cardiac arrest is the loss of oxygen to your brain. And that's why it takes almost immediate attention, because you can suffer brain damage certainly in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
And is the sooner you start CPR, right, the sooner you get oxygen to the patient,
right,
the more chance you have of a full recovery. I actually had a friend that had cardiac arrest in Greensboro a few years ago. And when I went to visit him, he had been put on it's some kind of chill scenario it's almost like being put in an ice suit.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah. He had that happen.
Yeah. And it brings your body temperature down to about 90 degrees. and the theory is that it's almost like hibernation.
Yeah.
You require much less oxygen to function properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be in his room when he recovered consciousness. And this was a day or two later. It's suspenseful. And it's also very, very worrying, a lot of anxiety, because is he going to be able to talk? Is he going to be able to, move his extremities? Is he going to be able to function properly? Now, thankfully, all the answers to those questions were yes, but nobody knew at the time, not even the nurses.
Mm.
They put him through a little series of, exams, so to speak, with feeling and responsiveness and all that kind of stuff. Because a lot of people that go through heart surgery lose oxygen to their brain at some point in time and lose part of their memory function.
Yeah.
There was another situation a few years ago. It's probably more than a few now, maybe five or six. After a basketball game, the bus taking residents of Carol Woods back to Carol Woods after the basketball game. A guy on that bus who lives at Carol Woods, who's a friend of mine, had a heart attack. And lucky for him, also on that bus was a guy who was a retired pharmacist who knew CPR. And both of them are members of the East Chapel Hill Rotary Club, like I am. And so the retired pharmacist basically saved the other guy's life. And they're both, he's still living today. He said, the retired pharmacist says, whenever the other guy introduces him, the retired pharmacist, to somebody else, he always says, "This is the guy that saved my life."
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got to be thankful for that.
That was again another case that he was in the right place and had the right people around him. Of course, the guy who was doing the CPR, I've heard him say, he said he didn't think that rescue squad truck, ambulance, was ever going to get to that bus because it was in the middle of traffic. I mean, I remember I was sitting in the traffic when they stopped traffic dead to direct it, because it happened right there at the driveway coming out of the Smith Center. Uh-huh. And so they had to stop traffic, get a lane open to get that ambulance down in there. And, It was quite an ordeal, and the guy doing the CPR said, "You just don't know how tired you get doing CPR if you have to do it like 5 minutes, you're just exhausted when you're." And he said I just kept going, because he said that was the only way he's going to stay alive. And I said, "Well, how long did it take?" He said, "I really don't know." He said, All I was doing was focused on pumping away."
Well, here I am, an old person, and if I had taken notes and written down Damar Hamlin on my notes, I wouldn't have remembered his name. That's the c- condition that you get with old age. You can't remember things that you should remember, not because of an injury, just because of your, as you say, your brain is tuning off. And that's what happens to me, and I guess it happens to other people as you get past whatever age limit you should be into another element. You begin to tune off.
I hate to tell a story with kind of a lighter touch to it, but it's related, and it just shows how far things have come and changed. It had to be at least 40 years ago. I was in the JCs, the Chapel Hill Carrboro JCs, and we had one of these barnstorming basketball games at the Chapel Hill High Gym. You know, former players, AC, Duke, Carolina players would play. They travel all around and do these fundraising things. So
I actually played in one of those games one time.
So we had one of these games. And
what do you call these games?
They call them barnstorming. You know, they go play and show off and all that.
And are they fundraisers?
Some organization. So anyway, and here we were just a bunch of young Jason, you know, and they didn't require any medical personnel to be there nothing. Well, this guy hurt his knee. And so somebody involved with it came to us and said, "Do y'all have a doctor here?" Well, the only doctor we had there was a guy in the club, in the JCs, who was a dentist.
Okay.
So we said, "John, go out there and look at him and tell him you're a doctor."
bunch of crazy JCs.
Yeah. And John looked at him and they said, he said, "We think he hurt his knee." And he said, "So what happened? Did somebody bite him? What am I going to do?" Oh, Lord.
Maybe he would extract his patella.
I don't remember what happened beyond that. I think somebody took him to the hospital. I don't think it was. I hope it wasn't anything serious. I don't remember. Because like I said, it was at least 40 years ago, maybe longer than that.
Back to football, the bowl games of any purpose other than to raise money?
The main purpose, teams play each other,
they never even heard of the other team.
Yeah. Well, the main purpose for bowl games that are not in any kind of championship or any New Year's Day type thing is you get extra practices. Is it 12, Bob?
I think it was something like that. Yeah.
It's what?
Yeah, a double digit number that your team. Practice. Yeah, you have extra practices for the bowl game, so you can basically get your team prepared not for just this game, but also for the coming, next year.
Yeah. In theory, you're preparing for the bowl game, but all these teams, they use it to practice, let their younger players practice and try to get prepared for the next season. So that's the biggest advantage the teams get from it.
So do they let a lot of players play who didn't get much exposure during a regular season?
They may not let them play in the game, but they get a lot of practice.
Okay.
Right.
They do have
about a week practice, don't they?
That's about 12 days. About I think it's 12 practices.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And in the last few years, where players have opted out of a bowl game, because they're going to the NFL or trying to go to the NFL, or they put themselves in the transfer portal so they can go play somewhere else because they think the grass is greener on the other side. That's when the younger players, you know, get to both practice and play. North Carolina had a significant number of folks that didn't play much during the regular season that basically had to play in their bowl game.
There used to be, and prior to all this name, image, and likeness stuff, there used to be some financial benefit to players. I mean, they didn't necessarily get paid, but they got a lot of gear and stuff and gifts and all that. Plus, bowl games that were around the holidays, the school could pay for the players' transportation to the bowl game and back home for Christmas holidays, whereas they previously they couldn't do any of that kind of stuff. So it had some kind of periphery type of benefits like that. But I guess all that stuff's gone away now. They can do whatever they want to now.
Carolina's bowl game was at Oregon. Was that the one just recently?
It was in California. It was in San Diego.
San Diego. Yeah. It's where they... And they played Oregon, yeah.
Yeah, they played Oregon, yeah.
So if Carolina had a player from Florida and he went to San Diego, basically he could go home to Florida by way of San Diego by going to the bowl game, and Carolina would have to pay for his transportation, where normally at the end of the semester they couldn't do that. So
how did Carolina get picked to play Oregon? How did that match up? Get arranged.
Well, all these different conferences have arrangements with bowl games to put their teams in the bowl games, and the ACC has an arrangement with that Holiday Bowl to put a team in there, and they sort of have a pecking order based on how good you are to get into the game.
Yeah, well, Duke played some Florida team, I think.
Central Florida.
Yeah. They don't even know where the school is.
Well, you kind of
forget. It's in Orlando. Well,
Central Florida has had some good football teams, Bill. Yeah.
Huh?
They're one of those schools you don't want to play on a They've had some good football teams. Matter of fact, several years ago, they were kind of declared a co-national champion or something.
Yeah, they had a team that, where they go that year, Bob? Was that 11-1 were they undefeated?
Yeah, they had a good team.
They beat Auburn.
Yeah.
They beat Auburn in their bowl game.
You don't poo-poo. Bill, you don't poo-poo these teams anymore. Everybody's got good players. So it's not like you're playing the Sisters of the Poor anymore. Everybody's got good players.
Well, now we have the conferences shifting. A couple of California schools, I guess, are supposedly.
That's old news, Bill. That's old news. That happened last summer.
I know, but we haven't talked about that.
Yes, we did. We talked about it last time.
Oh, did we? Okay. Two California schools joining. Yeah, I guess we did. But what's all that mean for the ACC? That's what I want to know. Yeah.
Well, right now,
Big 14 or something like that.
Right now, it hadn't meant anything. Officially, there may be all kinds of underlying things going on, but nothing's happened with the ACC as yet.
Well, does the ACC have any stature among leagues now that the Big Ten is shifting and the SEC supposedly is bigger?
We did talk about that. And what we talked about
The ACC is one of the rest of the conferences.
The
Big Ten and the SEC are so far dominant over everybody else, it's not even close.
Look how
bad LSU beat Purdue.
Yeah, Big Ten versus SEC. I don't know. But the thing is money, and the SEC and the Big Ten have the contracts, and supposedly they're going to be paid over $100 million a year for their athletic department. And looks like the ACC is going to be way behind that, half or less. So that's where you lose your status.
Yep.
You know, if it's another school's getting $60 million a year more than you are, that's going to be facilities and NIL. And you know, basically, we're paying for players now. Yeah. Not that hasn't happened before under the table.
I think when we talked about this before, I think I said, and I think it's still true, the only thing that's going to save the ACC financially is Notre Dame. ACC will have to get Notre Dame to agree to become a full-fledged member of the ACC. And I don't know if that'll ever happen or not now with this expanded 12-team playoff, because if Notre Dame's got any kind of decent team, they're going to be in that playoff. I don't care who they are. And the only way you were going to get them to say, okay, we're going to affiliate with a conference, is if they got screwed out of the playoff sometime. Well, yep. That with four teams, there was a chance at some point they might get screwed out of it. But with 12, they'll always have a spot if they have a decent team.
What convinced Notre Dame to become an ACC participant? Was it persuasion by the local Catholic churches in North Carolina?
It was nothing but the money, Bill. They could have their cake and eat it too. They could affiliate in basketball and every other sport and still be independent in football, and so they got the best of both worlds.
So what are they not involved in? With sports wise, what sports are they out of?
In ACC?
Yeah.
Football.
Just football?
Well, they probably play hockey, and I doubt anybody in ACC plays hockey except maybe Boston College. I don't know. There might be some other sports like that, but the only thing they don't participate in at the ACC, and then the ACC bend over and let them be in the conference during the COVID year, which to me was just that was ridiculous. That should have been the point where we said, okay, put up or shut up. If you want to play, join the conference. If not, have a good time.
Well, you didn't want to say that, have a good time, because you need them in the conference, as you said earlier in the conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, we shouldn't have let them say, we shouldn't have said, oh, why don't y'all play for the ACC football championship this year since we got this COVID problem? You know, that's not right.
Yeah, I guess you're right there. So what's the world of spring sports like at your school, where you have some good, particularly some good women's stuff? What's the spring sports world look like?
I hate to admit, I haven't tuned into that yet.
Baseball,
we're ranked the preseason number 11, but that doesn't mean anything. I'm assuming some of these, we've got a great sports program with all these other sports.
Lacrosse. Well, you have some great women's programs too.
That's what I mean. That, yeah, everything, all of them. Yeah, yeah. So I'm sure they'll be good. Hopefully, we got to find a new field hockey coach. Karen Shelton has retired after coaching for over 40 years, winning 25. After winning 25 ACC championships and 10 national championships, I guess she decided she'd about done all she could do. The last season, and had the stadium named for her. The last season she coached, they were undefeated national champions. So she's had a hell of a career.
Is this field hockey?
Yeah.
What's the status of field hockey among the Carolina students? Do people show up at the matches? I don't know much about field hockey.
Well, I guess in compared to football and basketball, no. But
I know that's
but
true.
They've drawn pretty well. Well, they had such a great team, and they had this girl Erin Mattson, who was the best player in the country for 4 or 5 years. So she was quite a draw, and they had some big crowds, and the stadium they have is very nice. It's right there on the campus, right behind the baseball stadium. So it probably seats, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 people, something like that. So they have good crowds.
Well, you go to those matches yourself, right?
Not all of them. I've been to a few.
We just lost our other member of this team here.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I've been to a few. Field hockey is fun to watch. I don't know all the rules, but it's fun. It's a lot of action. It's a lot better than soccer. Most anything's better than soccer.
What's your problem with soccer?
Well, you know, it's just
it's an international sport.
Sure, yeah, but you know, they just play and play and play, and nothing. I mean, they're back and forth, and there's not much scoring.
No, that's true. You win one to nothing.
Yeah, and yeah, team gets a two goal lead, it's basically over, unless the referees make a bad call against you in the national championship game, like what happened to Carolina when they lost to UCLA in the national championship game.
When was that?
Well, Carolina had been ahead all the game, and UCLA scored with a couple of minutes to go to cut it to one goal, and then it was in the final seconds. With 16 seconds, UCLA scored a goal, and basically they attacked the goal and knocked down the Carolina goalie, which should have been a penalty. She was inside the goal. They knocked her down. And so they scored the tying goal, and it was pretty, obvious, but so, of course, they still had to play overtime, but Carolina, they were very demoralized after the way that happened. And so UCLA scored a winning goal in overtime.
What's the scholarship arrangement for the various sports in, let's take UNC or even Duke or any place? What's the scholarship arrangement with a, let's say, that hotshot senior basketball player you guys have? What's his scholarship arrangement versus a number one field hockey player?
Well, I think the NCAA sets the limits as to how many scholarships you can offer in a sport, and then of course it's up to the school if you can afford to have that many scholarships. I heard an interview with Karen Shelton, the retiring field hockey coach, and she was talking about how when she first started at Carolina, they only got 3 full scholarships. That's all the school. And I don't know if what the NCAA limit was, but that's all Carolina had was 3 full scholarships. But over time, as they were successful, that was built up. And I think she said they allow 12 full scholarships. But that doesn't mean a player has a full scholarship. They can take them and divide them up among players. Now, I would imagine Erin Mattson, who was this number one field hockey player, my guess is she had a full scholarship. I mean, she was the number one player in the country. But probably a lot of her teammates are getting partial scholarships because of the limitation as the number they can give. I know the same thing's true in baseball. There's a limited number of scholarships they have in baseball. And they have, they may have 35 players on the team, but not –
I think it's 11 scholarships in baseball.
In baseball, So, so you know, they divide them up among the players. They might get a superstar pitcher that might get a he may not get a full scholarship, but he might get close, three quarters or something like that, and then they divide them up where they can. But no, it's.
Yeah, it's totally different in football and basketball.
Right.
So-called revenue sports because.
And so, what are you saying now? What are you saying about
football? It's totally different in football and basketball because you get 13 scholarships in basketball, and 13 players get full scholarships. And if you carry 15 or 16 or 17 on your roster, then the rest of them are walk-ons. In football, you get 85 scholarships.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be a lot more. I mean, Ohio State, God.
Oh, yeah.
Way back in the day when Woody Hayes was coaching, Ohio State would stockpile players. They'd have over 100 scholarships given. And finally, the NCAA stopped that.
They used to talk about Alabama. Bear Bryant would give people scholarships just so they wouldn't go play for Tennessee or Auburn.
I don't doubt. That's good logic.
But, you know, now with the NIL, name, image, and likeness, you talk about the top field hockey player. Well, Aaron Mattson might get a full scholarship. But
yeah.
And this is just rumor. So I have no idea. I don't have access to financial records of basketball players at the University of North Carolina. But it's rumored that Armando Bacot is pulling down over $1 million, or certainly over $500,000 this year, because he is advertising. He has a line of apparel. He's, you know, so on and so forth. He was on a TV show. You're not probably not a fussy hockey player that's going to pull $500,000 or $1 million.
Why did he stay there for 4 years?
Tim just told you why.
Yeah, but he could have made more money.
He can earn more. He's not the quintessential NBA center. You know, the perfect NBA center right now can not only be big and bigger than Bacot for rebounding and defense, but he can also step out and hit 3-point shots, which Bacot has not demonstrated in a game that he can do.
And I hope he doesn't try to demonstrate it.
I saw him shoot an air ball at Pittsburgh.
If he's a team player, he should not be trying to do that. He's not an out. Yeah. I'm sorry. I hope he can make it in the NBA and all that. But he does not need to be trying to prove that while he's playing at Carolina.
Well, the longest shot Armando hit last night was a beautiful 10-foot hook shot.
Well, he made a couple free throws. Those are long.
Those are 15-footers.
Right. but he should not be trying to prove that he can do that, because that's not his game. And Carolina, we don't need or want that, I don't think.
Well, okay, but he's been around long enough to be an All-American.
He's a great player, no doubt about that.
So he's not an outside shooter. What's going to be his greatness in the professional game? What is his talent that's going to make him a professional star, if anything?
I don't think he will be a rebounder, but he will. I don't think he's not going to be a star. He could be a good pro, but he's not going to be a star. You ain't got many stars, Bill.
Yeah.
NBA game is really different.
Yeah, it is. I never watch an NBA game because my cousin in California watches every game for every sport. This is a woman's former airline hostess. And she watches everything in San Francisco because she lives right there, and she watches all sports. And I say, Susan, I'm only watching two baseball teams, two football teams, and in the ACC, football or basketball, and one team in lacrosse. That's all I ever watch. And she
I can't watch all those games either. It's just too many.
There are.
Hey, Bill, you haven't brought up. We've been on here almost an hour, and you haven't brought up what happened last night in Raleigh.
No, what happened last night in Raleigh?
Well, that school that you got the posters on your door behind you got their ears boxed in by NC State.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't check the sports.
I think they were down 18-0 before they ever scored.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. The final. What was the final? 84-60.
It was over 20 points, yeah.
Yeah, it was 24 points. The biggest defeat, Duke's biggest defeat by an unranked team ever, I believe. Something of that nature. When Duke was ranked and they were playing an unranked team, that's the biggest loss they've ever had.
Well, I watched Duke play Purdue, and that was an embarrassment.
Well, Purdue's pretty good, except they got beat.
I know Purdue's number one.
Well, they won't be next week.
They got beaten, as I mentioned in my email to you. They got beaten by Rutgers.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
2 years in a row, Rutgers.
Yeah,
I mean, 2 years in a row.
When I lived in New Jersey for many years, I didn't know Rutgers even played sports. But
really?
You know, Not much in the local.
Damn,
paper.
Bill! They played the first college football game. Rutgers.
Oh, I know that was back in 1820 or something like that. Back when you were a child.
Huh. Were you there? Did you go?
Yeah, I went to that.
Hey, Rutgers is famous for women's basketball.
Oh yeah.
Who they have? They had a star. Who was that star they had at Rutgers?
Well, they had their
women's basketball star.
Their coach was a Skinner.
Well, the coach was a star. Vivian Stringer.
Stringer.
What's her name?
Yeah.
Vivian Stringer was her name. And she was a flamboyant, outgoing,
outspoken
basketball coach. Yeah, outspoken. She was basically a women's advocate, which good for her. And you know, back in the day, I don't know if she's still coaching there or not. I don't think so.
I doubt it.
But okay, you got about 2 minutes left, Bill.
I don't keep thinking about what we could talk about at the next event because, as I tell you, I don't watch much of these games anymore. And I depend on you guys to carry the ball on these shows because you are so tuned into everything. I mean, you even know the women's basketball coach from Rutgers. I didn't even know Rutgers had how to spell the name.
Well, you know, it just when you spend a lot of time watching basketball, I like watching college basketball. I don't watch it as much as I used to.
Either.
But oftentimes, and my wife Patty says oftentimes what goes on the crawl, you know, the information and the words that are below the picture that are explaining something is a lot more interesting than what's on the main screen.
I agree with her, and I watch those crawls, as you call them, and tell your wife that obviously she has an intellect that she should be advertising more. So anyway, the way that I do these shows from now on, we do two shows. We repeat today's show the next week because listeners, I send out an announcement and people get the announcement and they forget to tune in. So we're going to do two shows exactly the same next week as we're doing this week. So if you have any friends that missed this show, Be sure that they tune in next Monday at 5 p.m. to hear Time Out. Thank you.